Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is presented by WynnBET. Bet $10 at WynnBET and get $200 in free bets. Bet big and win bigger with WynnBET. Download the WynnBET app now or visit WynnBET.com and start winning today. We're also brought to you by Coors Light. Get mountain cold refreshment delivered straight to your door via Drizzly or Instacart by going to CoorsLight.com/SGP. That's CoorsLight.com/SGP. And next, we're also brought to you by PropSwap, America's marketplace to buy and sell sports bets. Use promo code SGP on your first deposit to receive up to $500 in bonus cash. Head on over to PropSwap.com or download the PropSwap app today. And finally, we're also brought to you by StableDuel. StableDuel is horse racing daily fantasy sports app where you can play free and paid games for real cash prizes. You can win as much as $40,000 with just one entry. Head on over to StableDuel.com to get started today. And in honor of the Masters, we are giving away a tailor-made driver. Just go to sg.pn/masters. That's sg.pn/masters. Or click the contest link right in the SGPN app.
Howdy ho, DeGenerinos. Welcome to the MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network, episode 131. Let's send this one out to my Phoenix Suns, who last night set the franchise record for most wins in a season, and in the process, they eliminated the Lakers out of any playoff contention this year, which is fantastic. So good job, boys. Good job. All the way to the title this year, onwards and upwards. But this isn't a Phoenix Suns podcast, at least not at this point. Sometimes it devolves into that. This isn't, as the title says, this is an MMA gambling podcast. So we bring you exactly what it says on the tin is what you get. Just a couple of degens giving you some degen picks for your degen ear holes, so, or wherever you stick our podcast. So this week we got a pay-per-view, which is always good. Always good news. Some interesting underdog picks I stumbled across too. We'll have to see if my co-host is on the same page or not. Hopefully he's not, at least for some of them, so we can we have some fun come fight night. Who am I, you might be asking? I am the Korean Zombie, Jeff Fox, the host of this year podcast. Perhaps you've heard of me before. Dana White used to wear a shirt with my nickname on it all the time. So thank you for coming to the show. Hopefully you're listening to us on our feed, the MMA Gambling Podcast feed. Because then you will get us in your ears basically a day and a half early. You don't go out in the SGPN feed until like Friday morning, and all the insiders, all the people with the smart marks are subscribing to our MMA Gambling Podcast feed, and they get us like Wednesday night as soon as we drop it, like it's hot. So there you go. Make sure you subscribe there and throw up some reviews. The Golf Gambling Podcast is getting so many reviews now, it's making us look really, really lame. So put some reviews up. You can complain about us being racist like they do with other podcasts on our network. I don't care. As long as it's Gumby that you're saying is misleading you. Maybe not with the racism, but with his bad picks. And then by all means, as long as he gives 5 stars, it is all good. So I mentioned that name, Gumby. He would be the co-host of this podcast. He's still trying to redeem himself from last weekend. I've heard his other podcast, the Top Turtle MMA podcast and the Prelim Picker podcast. I was going to say, I hope he's prepared to redeem himself this weekend, but he's got some wonky ideas about this card that we're going to have to get into. So let's bring him on. Hello, Mr. Daniel Gumby Vreeland. Danny, I mean.
You have the vast majority of my picks already if you listen to both of those podcasts. True. However,
yeah, I already had mine all picked by then, luckily, so I didn't change any of my picks. So.
All right, yeah, okay. But
oh, you'll hear. You have some wacky picks, dude.
I will say there's a couple that I am going to go a little bit deeper on because, as you know, those don't give you every single pick, and it certainly doesn't give you a good breakdown at every single pick. So that's why you always tune in right here to the SGPN and get all of the good stuff.
Exactly. And this is a highly anticipated episode for some reason. I've had three people, maybe four, reach out to me already about the podcast. Like, we haven't even started. We're just recording it now, obviously, as you hear this. But, yeah, they're asking, when are we dropping it? What are our picks going to be? They can't wait to hear our podcast. So either people are really pumped for this card or they just love us. Maybe both.
I think it's a little bit of the pump for the card. You know, I don't mean to, you know, maybe undersell us, but there are a lot of people on this card, a lot of people who are fighting who maybe are not necessarily the top of the top yet, but are, like, very much hyped for one reason or another. You know, like, you know, obviously Khamzat Chimaev is the one that we're going to talk about the most, but, like, there are other people, too, like Ian Garry, who is Ireland's next hope, is kind of on this fight card and exciting in a way, but, like, kind of up for grabs on exactly what he is. You know, we've talked extensively about, like, we still really don't know what Mackenzie Dern's ceiling is, and, like, she has been highly hyped since she came to the UFC, so we got her in there. And, like, further down the card, we have some people who have been fan favorites. Like, Kay Hansen is, you know, much loved by the UFC community. Aspen Ladd used to be that person and now is universally hated. And maybe that's, hey, maybe that's good for viewership. You know, Mickey Gall was like a weird prospect, but now he's in his 30s and we don't really still shed that prospect. So, like, there's just, like,
just weird.
Yeah,
take the prospect out. He's just weird now.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. There's so many people in there who are, in one way, shape, or form, just like kind of intriguing to even talk about. And for me, I'll be honest, it made this card really hard for me to break down. I think there's a lot of close fights in this one, and a lot of lines that really have got me scratching my head, and not necessarily in a way where I want to dig for that underdog right away, but it's still like the lines are still kind of wonky.
Yeah, no, it's true. I was surprised by a lot of lines. I made my picks fairly quickly, but I'm not 100% confident on all of them. I'm not totally locked in. I don't think I'm going to switch any of them, but yeah, like you said, some of the lines are wonky. On paper, according to the bookies, we got nothing but squash matches at the top of the card, at least. Major odds on high odds in the top three fights of the night. But yeah, it seems like it is a very card people are pretty amped up for. Obviously, two title fights plus the hottest prospect in the sport. And I just did a quick count. I think there's 9 people on this card who have headlined a UFC event before, so it is pretty stacked, even if the odds for the premier elite fights at the very top are pretty one-sided, predicting one-sided fights.
Yeah, and based on my quick scan, you actually might be low on that estimate.
Yeah, all right.
Right? So we've had Volk, obviously, yep. Chan Sung Jung,
yep.
Aljamain Sterling, Piotr Jan.
Yep.
Actually, has Aljamain Sterling ever main evented a card?
Oh, that's right. I forgot about the actual main.
I'm not sure if Aljamain Sterling has ever main evented a card. Oh, he might have against Jimmy Rivera. Nope, not Jimmy Rivera. Marlon Moraes. Was him versus Marlon Moraes the headlining?
I don't see him headlining. He didn't headline any. No, he didn't headline any. Actually, he hasn't headlined. You're right. Wow.
That is wild. I'm really glad I called that out. But yeah, he hasn't headlined.
He was on the poster for UFC 259, but he was not the headliner of that one.
Okay, so three of the people in the title fights, not including the champ, Aljamain Sterling. Mackenzie Dern is headlined a fight card. Tiesha Torres is not, correct?
You skip Burns, but yes. Torres is not, I don't think. Burns has.
Okay, Burns has. That's 5. Nice. Has Olenek?
I don't think so. I'm going to check. Rosenstrike, Tybura, they both did, right?
Yep, so that's up to 7. Aspen Ladd and Raquel Pennington both have. That's 8 and 9.
Pennington has, right. Yeah, I forgot about her. Yes. Oh, Olenek did too. So 10, holy moly.
10. 10 headliners.
And that's not, I undercounted and then I overcounted with Sterling. So, wow. So, yeah, this is a fairly deep card. Even if, like I said, the odds are a little skewed at the top, this is a very deep card full of, you got up and comers, you got veterans that have actually turned things around as of late, like Pennington and someone else has won a bunch in a row.
I mean, up until he lost his fight to Alexander Volkov, Marcin Tybura had won 5 in a row.
Right, yep. Yeah, so anyway, well, we'll break all this down soon enough. I'm seeing if there's any news. Well, what we mentioned last card is become a last podcast has become a big story. PFL has getting in a lot of trouble with the odds makers because their Challenger Series event was taped. They did not tell people that it was taped, and a bunch of bets came in, and I actually put that rumor out on the SGPN Slack channel that the rumor is it was a taped card and all the favorites won, and some people took advantage of that. And I guess a lot of odds makers are mad because they ended up out a lot of money because of PFL.
I can't imagine why they were bummed about that.
I know. I hear they're already losing their license in a bunch of places. Like, they're not going to post PFL odds anymore. So, very PFL of them.
Why would you? Because, first of all, I would just say it's not like money comes in big on PFL cards. I can't imagine.
Only if people know the results in advance. And then, then it does.
Right. Well, and I would just say, like, what? The biggest PFL cards are the ones that have Kayla Harrison on it. And you can't possibly be taking tons of action on a fighter who's negative 1,200 or negative 1,400. Yep. And also, speaking of absolutely ridiculous odds, so we broke down LFA 128 on Sunday. Since then, they've added one line to that. Bryce Meredith, who you may not know, but I'm a big fan of Bryce Meredith. He was a wrestler at Wyoming. He trains with, like, Sean O'Malley and Kyler Phillips now down in Arizona. I believe he's had one MMA fight so far, but he is, like, a very high-level wrestler. He is going to be making his second fight against kind of a schlub, and he is now posted at negative 2,000.
What's the biggest line you've ever seen for MMA? Do you remember?
For MMA, negative 2,000 has got to be close.
It's up there.
Man, I don't know. I can't off the top of my head recall somebody more than negative 2,000, because even in, like, Ronda Rousey heyday, when she was just smashing chicks in, like, 6 seconds or stuff like that, like, even then, she was only posting at, like, negative 850 and negative 900. So, negative 2,000 really tells you a lot.
It does. It does. So we got that. We also I don't think a lot of info has been released yet, but I'm seeing that UFC is setting up 8-man tournaments over in Asia, apparently. Did you hear about that? The lower weight classes, 125, 135, 145, 155, maybe?
I did hear that. It was all, or at least officially reported the first time by JHK, John Hyun-Kyo. And he's a pretty reliable source, so I believe everything that I'm seeing there. It seems sort of like they're – because they tried out doing the Ultimate Fighter over there, right, in Asia. I can't remember if it was Japan or China. I think it was China, right?
Yeah, I think it was, yeah.
But they tried doing the Ultimate Fighter over there, and I think while the concept is you know, like you would figure the TV show, reality show would still work, it seemed to not do so well. So I almost wonder if this is their alternative to it. Is they're like, okay, maybe, you know, Japan, China, Korea is not in on what the Ultimate Fighter is with all the horseshit. They just want the fights. And, like, you know, like tournaments are always fun. Maybe they do them in one-night tournaments or stuff like that, and they wind up with, you know, just one contract winner at the end of it all. So it seems kind of like it is going to be, like, four separate tournaments, and we get four new signees from it. I'm into it. I think it's a good idea as far as, like, if we're going to do something a little bit different from a different region, I feel like that's the thing to do.
Yep, for sure. I would definitely watch it over. I wouldn't be watching the Ultimate Fighter, but I would watch tournament for sure. And I think this the winners of it, I think that gives them a bit more respect on their name, as the kids say. I think it gives them a bit more hype behind them than winning Ultimate Fighter that no one seems to really care about anymore, too.
I care about at least
different. I know, other than you. It at least gives them a different shine than the usual thing. So, hey, it's worth a try. And like you said, and I agree, I'm all for tournaments. So the more the merrier. So any other news you think we need to touch on? Julianna Pena is still
running her mouth. Not news. That's not news.
I just wish these things wouldn't get reported. I guess I shouldn't be mentioning it either. But people report it. Like, anytime a fighter says something stupid, it's reported as a news story. If you don't report it, no, they'd just be yawning into the void. But regardless, anything else that's dumb or not dumb that we should get into, or should we just jump into making picks for people, Dan?
I think we got to get to making picks.
All right, let's do this. First, WynnBET, of course. Make sure you get down on the WynnBET's $10 win $200 promotion. So bet 10. Sorry, I missed the bet part. I said WynnBET, but it's really make sure you get down on wins. Bet $10, win $200 promotion. A lot of wins and bets in there for me. So you bet 10, win 200, where a $10 bet qualifies you for up to $200 in free bets. The Win has a special golf contest for this weekend. It's the Masters this weekend. Bet $100 plus on golf from Thursday to Sunday, and you'll be entered to win a golf experience to the only golf course on the Las Vegas Strip, Win Golf Club. Multiple entries allowed. If a patron wagers $1,000 on the major golf championship Thursday to Sunday, I'm thinking, they are eligible for 10 entries into the prize draw. There you go. Major golf insurance. All users can bet $50 plus on the Masters. I thought they weren't mentioning the Masters for some reason, but there they go. They mentioned it. If you bet $50 plus on the Masters winner and get their money back up to $25 if they finish in the top three of the tournament. So you bet $50 plus on the Masters winner and you get your money back if they finish in the top three of the tournament. We need a better copywriter here. But anyhow, I think it's the boss that writes it, so hopefully he's not listening. There's so much to choose from. And all you have to do is download the WynnBET app or visit WynnBET.com to get started. The bosses don't listen to us, though, do they? They would have taken us off ages ago, right?
I don't know. We win enough to stay on the network, I think.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, I forgot the important part. Ready? This is the must-free part. Offer subject to change. Terms, conditions at WynnBET.com. Must be 21 or older and present in the state where playthrough WynnBET is available. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. That was pretty good, eh? It was fast.
It's very good. You've picked it up a notch since we started the podcast.
It's true. Also, while we're on the golf tip, we have a TaylorMade driver giveaway. In honor of the Masters, we're, as in SGPM, are giving away a TaylorMade driver. Just go to sg.pn/masters or click the contest link in the SGPN app. And we thank Daniel Vreeland for buying that driver for the listeners. Thanks, Dan.
Like everything's coming out of my wallet.
It is. Dan's the high roller. But didn't we reveal that you have two garages, for crying out loud? A two-car garage? Come on. You're a high roller, dude.
It's called a car hole.
A car hole, right. There you go. Good boy. Good boy. All right. UFC 273, the Octagon. The lights were dim last weekend with no event. We survived, and now we're back. And it's actually on the road. We are in the ViStar Veterans Memorial Arena in Jacksonville, Florida. This is one of the UFC's favorite spot come pandemic. Basically, Houston or Jacksonville, basically, are the spots that get the big views at this point. I guess Arizona does, too, a bit. But this is where we are this weekend. Saturday, of course, April the 9th. I've seen 6:15 also listed as the start time, so somewhere around there. ESPN Plus, UFC Fight Pass for the early prelims, and then the main prelims, ESPN, ESPN Plus at 8, all times Eastern, and then the main card on pay-per-view at 10 p.m. Pay-per-view is still a thing, and they're actually doing very good on pay-per-view since the pandemic started. So there you go. Who would have thought pay-per-view would still be a thing nowadays, but it is still in MMA. So, all right. We've got 13 fights. Yes, 13 fights on the card. Been a lot of shuffling and stuff. We always like to get you set before we actually get into the card. What did we lose? We've lost. Oh, yeah. There was a whole bunch of stuff. We had Kevin Gastelum versus Nassourdin Imavov. Dricus Duplessis versus Chris Curtis and Anthony Hernandez versus Albert Duraev. All those were scheduled. Then we had we lost Curtis and we lost Duraev. So they put Duplessis versus Hernandez. And then we had Gastelum. Imavov withdrew from Gastelum. So then Duplessis got put to fight against Gastelum. I hope everyone's catching on. So Dricus Duplessis, this is his third fighter for the event that he was set up with Gastelum, and then Gastelum pulled out as well. So he has no fight. And then we ended up
with... And his second opponent is still there.
That's right. Yeah.
He could have gone back and fought Anthony Hernandez, but they had already found him Josh Fremd and didn't want to pull Josh Fremd from the fight or find him another opponent. So, we wound up taking Dricus Duplessis out of this. Who would be, especially because he's from South Africa. So I don't know where if he's necessarily training in South Africa, but this is not an easy fight card for him to get to.
South Africa, EFC, our favorite promotion, Dan.
He did fight for that and KSW, which is another one we talk about far too much.
That's true. But yeah, it's kind of a bummer. All three of those fights I would have liked to see the original matchups. But nonetheless, it is what it is.
I was fading Kelvin Gastelum in each of his perspective matches.
Yeah, he's one of those almost. He's not quite at the automatic fade point, but it might.
He's
be
close. He's pretty close.
He's not getting knocked out nonstop, but he's getting very close. We also were supposed to have Asmalad versus Irene Aldana, or Irene, if you prefer. I would have liked to see that, but Aldana fell out, so Raquel Pennington stepped in. And then the fight we all wanted, our hearts were set on this, Alexi Olenek versus Ilir Latifi. We were supposed to have it at what? Was it Columbus or was it the one before that? Was it?
It was Columbus.
Columbus, and then it got bumped to this card, and then we lost it. And
we've got an equally weird fight.
I know. Instead, we have Jared Vandera, who was an interesting fellow when he was on the Top Turtle, right? He was interesting, right?
He fought for EFC, too, despite being American.
But he was one of those, quote-unquote, interesting interviews, I believe, if I remember correctly.
He was an odd cat.
Anyhow, he's fighting Alexi Olenek, so there you go. So, after all of that, we're an hour into the podcast, after all that shuffling. We have 13 fights. We're back to where I started all that with. So, let's kick it off. Bantamweights, Julio Arce versus Daniel Santos. Santos is Wiley Cat. Arce, no nickname.
Is it Wiley Cat or is it Willy Cat?
Excuse me. Two L's. Willy Cat.
I think it's Willy Cat. I don't know what the hell a Willy Cat is. I don't know what a Wiley Cat is, especially if it's one word, but I certainly don't know what a Willy Cat is.
I only know what a Wiley Coyote is, not a cat. Coyotes, I guess it could be a Wiley Coyote type of thing. I'm Googling. Willy Cat. It is 2L, so you're right. It is Willie. He's not Wiley. Anything come up? Just pictures of this man. So
yeah, it's pictures of him.
All right, we're gonna have to. I was hoping to see some strange animal I had never discovered in my travels up here in Canada or elsewhere in the world. But regardless, Dan, you'll have to have him on the Top Turtle podcast and find out what the nickname means, because that's always what you like to ask your guests on your podcast. So let me tell you about this gentleman. He's 8-1. Half of those eights would equal four. That would be the number of knockouts. Four knockouts, one submission, never been finished in a fight, so he lost one decision in his career. This is his UFC debut after he had a lot of fights fall out. What, three fights? Maybe four? So he's not fought since December of 2019 due to all these fights falling out. He's won two straight fights, all via finish. Used to fight down at flyweight. This is what Bantamweight said, right? He's 6 years younger than Arce at +160. Julio Arce, 17-5, five knockouts, five submissions. So we got fives going on there. He's been knocked out once, submitted once in his career. He's 4-3 in the UFC. We got ourselves a pattern: loss, win, loss, win, loss. So that's five straight fights we've gone back and forth. He lost his last fight via TKO. Now, the pattern, Dan, is not doing as well as it was originally. We're down to 50% for the pattern coming through. So
you're going to get a lot of data on this one, because there are seven fighters who are on one of those long patterns.
Yep. This stat may get thrown out soon, depending on this weekend. We'll see how this weekend goes. If it's not, if it stays around 50%, there's no real point. All right. Lost fight via TKO. Like I said, he was 1-0 in the Contender Series. He was a Ring of Combat champion in two weight classes, I believe. He used to fight at featherweight. Yeah, he was featherweight champion and bantamweight champion, Ring of Combat. So we got a former flyweight versus a former featherweight in this fight. Despite that, he's only has 3 inches of reach on Santos, and they're the same height. So you would think he would have maybe he's going to be a lot thicker come fight night, but you'd think he'd have a bigger weight advantage or size advantage, but he does not. Made his pro debut in 2012, -195. First of all, what can you tell us about the Willy Cat, and what do you think about this fight?
So Willy Cat is an insane man in there.
That's what a Willy Cat is.
He throws wild spinning shit, tons of flying stuff. He's a slugger. Like he just wants to go in there and make it as wild as possible and as much of a brawl as possible. So, some people really like him for that. I've seen some spinning back kick, liver shot KOs out of him, or flying knees, and I've seen a lot of things I like. Here's the thing I don't like, though. First of all, that he's fighting Julio Arce in his debut, coming off a 2-year layoff. And in addition to coming off of a two-year layoff, where his first UFC bout is going to be off of that layoff. So it's not like he's coming off of a two-year layoff where he's already been in the UFC for a while. He's going to have the octagon jitters, the ring rust, all that kind of stuff balled into one. And he's a guy who
big
kind of... Yeah, on a
big
pay-per-view.
Big pay-per-view, lots of fans.
So. Live crowd. And he's a guy who relies on timing, right? Like all those things I'm talking about, spinning back kicks, flying knees, all that kind of stuff. It wears your energy out, which is a problem when you've had a lot of time out of the cage. And it relies on timing, which is a problem when you've been out of the cage for a really long time. And he's fighting a guy in Julio Arce who has an expert 1-2 punch combo. Like he throws a 1-2 just about as good as any bantamweight or featherweight in the world. Like, it is very sharp. It's very well put together. And granted, he doesn't pair it together with other things like other fighters do, but, like, when he decides to throw the crisp, clear combo that is just tried and true, he throws it, which means I think he's going to avoid the really flashy stuff. He's going to keep it super basic, and I'm going to go with Julio Arce here.
As am I. Arce is the pick. Yeah, this is... bit of an ask for a guy on his debut with, yeah, like you say, you would assume a bunch of ring rust on him. So yes, Arce is a pick. I should pull up my stats for fighters with a year off. Okay, fighters who have been out of the cage for a year or more, 48% winning percentage. And this year it's at 46%. So right around just below 50% still for that. So not a huge thing, but yeah, I think this is a different situation. His ring rust is not the only thing going against him. It's being his debut, and you don't usually see guys fighting guys with 7 UFC fights under the belt on their debut. So Arce is the pick here. Very interesting fight coming up next on the card. Women's strawweight, Pia Rodriguez versus Kay Hansen. Rodriguez is La Fiera. Do you know what that means, Dan?
The force?
The beast.
Okay.
But maybe for us. We don't speak Spanish up here, so you probably know better than I do. So
I think fuera is force, so I might have just been barely off.
Barely, like usual. Kay Hansen, no nickname. Let's talk about Hansen first. 7-5, 2 knockouts, 4 submissions. So she is a finisher in her wins, all of them but one. She's only been finished once in her career. She got knocked out or TKO'd once. She's 1-2 in the UFC. She won her debut, lost 2 straight. She was 5-3 in Invicta. So young fighter, but almost all of her fights except one have been basically in the big time, either Invicta or UFC. Used to fight at flyweight. Actually, her last fight was at flyweight. Now she's down at strawweight. She's 1-4 as a pro boxer. She's 7 years younger than Rodriguez. More active striker based on just one fight Rodriguez has had within the UFC confines in contender series. So small sample size there. Plus 104. Rodriguez, 7-0 with 5 knockouts. This will be her debut. She got in, as I said, from the contender series where she won her fight. She was formerly the LFA champ. She also used to fight up at flyweight. Inch taller than Hansen, minus 125. I think Rodriguez is pretty good. I'm going to pick you here. I was big on Hansen, but yeah, it's things don't seem to be clicking right for her, and I don't know if the drop to strawweight is going to be the best for her. She's talked about having eating disorder and struggling with that, so I don't know if cutting weight is going to help her here at all. But yeah, she seemed undersized at flyweight also, so she may be a tweener, who knows. But I just think Rodriguez is a better fighter here, and obviously way more power, 5 knockouts in just 7 pro fights, so I'm going to go with the newcomer here, minus 125.
Yeah, and I think she's cleaner on the feet, too, because I'm going to take Rodriguez for that same reason. And here's the problem, is that, like, Kay has always kind of relied on being able to body her opponents in order to you know, kind of bully her way to wins when she's struggling on the feet. And I don't know necessarily that works against Pieta, who is pretty strong and does a pretty good job of stuffing takedowns. I don't love Pieta Rodriguez's takedowns herself. Like, I don't think she's going to take Kay Hansen down, although I think she might try, which is probably not the best idea on her part. But even if I'm just saying here that I don't think either of them has great offensive ability with the takedown, the fact that both of them are good enough defensively to keep this on the feet – I think it really favors Rodriguez. I think she probably just peppers Kay Hansen. Now, if you listen to the Top Turtle MMA or the prelim primer rather this week, my co-host Lucas Grantsire actually brought up a really good point, and I'm curious if you've got a guess about this, and if the listener has an answer, I'd love to hear it. if Kay Anson loses this fight, this will be 3 in a row for her, which is pretty bad. But not only is it 3 in a row for her, it's 3-0 for her all against debuting opponents. Do you think that's the only time that's ever happened?
Oh, hard to say. Three losses in a row is rare to begin with, unless.
And she was not on her debut for any of them, so it's three debuting opponents when you yourself are a veteran.
That's very good. We should have a stats department, Dan, that looks these things up for us. But we're
somebody in the Slack channel, get at us.
Yes, please. Yeah, that's very interesting. I like your answer, but things just don't seem to be clicking for her here. I don't know if going back to Invicta would be the answer for her to straighten things out or what. But
it's worked for women like Angela Hill. You know, like she went back to Invicta, won a title, and figured things out in the process. So yeah, maybe that is the answer for her.
Yep, maybe Invicta's got to start running more events. They are very sporadic at this point. So, but this isn't an Invicta podcast, anyhow. At least it isn't now. If they do want to pay us, then by all means, we'll do an Invicta podcast for sure. So get at us. Middleweights, Anthony Fluffy Hernandez. I'll mention his nickname right now. What a great nickname for a fighter. Do you know is there a story behind that? You do have a story behind that.
I do. He was really fat for a long time in his life.
So he was fluffy, you would say.
Yeah, he was fluffy.
So loose, chunky.
He also said he looked, when he was fat, he looked a little bit like the comedian Gabriel Iglesias.
Oh, okay.
Who he's got like a special called I'm Not Big, I'm Fluffy or something like that.
All right. He's fighting, what's this guy's first name? Josh, isn't it? Josh Fremd, who's making his debut on short notice. Always a recipe for disaster unless your name is that Terrence McKinney character. But normally it's debut on a short notice, not a good thing. Let's tell you about Fremd. 9-2, 4 knockouts, 3 submissions. He's been finished once via knockout. He's won 2 straight fights. His last one via submission. He's got 4 inches of height on Hernandez, 2 inches of reach, plus 155. Fluffy, 8-2 with 1 no contest, 1 knockout, 6 submissions. He's been knocked out once, submitted once, so all of his losses have come via finish. And he's finished every fight except one, so you may have a prop bet here. 2-2 in the UFC. We got a pattern. Loss, win for him. His last win was February of 2021, which he won via submission. He got his way in via the Contender Series, but that's been changed to a no contest. Is that a weed thing? I think it's probably a weed thing. That's why that got changed. He was the LFA champ as well in the past. Minus 190 for Fluffy.
Is it my turn or your turn?
This is where you talk. Yeah, I picked Rodriguez first.
Oh, okay, you did pick Rodriguez. I thought it was your turn. I was waiting for you to make
that. That's fine. You're being polite. That's fine.
I'm going to take Josh Fremd in this fight.
What?
Tell me
about him.
I mean, for a couple of reasons. First of all, he's huge. He's like a big freaking dude. He's 6'4" at middleweight.
Right.
He's really freaking strong. I actually like his entries into takedowns a lot. And the other thing about Anthony Hernandez that I think we have to remember is a lot of us lauded him for his win over Rodolfo Vieira and were like, oh man, look at how good he was. I mean, he beat Rodolfo Vieira because Vieira like nearly killed himself, like trying to put Hernandez away because he had Hernandez in a lot of bad positions. And I think Fremd has the ability to use takedowns to get Hernandez to those same positions. And granted, I don't think he's a jiu-jitsu specialist like Rodolfo is, but I do think he has got a way better gas tank and a way better ability to keep it, keep those positions and to keep getting back to him. In addition to that, if this does keep the feet, he has got some really great range. He uses that really great range. And I don't know if you've seen some of his knockouts, dude. His knockouts, some of them, they're absolutely insane, some of the knockouts he's gotten. I'm trying to remember. I believe it was when he knocked out Bruno Oliveira that I'm remembering from LFA, where it looked like he just threw like kind of like a feeling him out hook and absolutely put Oliveira clean out. So, yeah, like I'm super high on Fremd. You know, the only loss he has since 2018, so in the last 4-plus years, was to Gregory Rodriguez, which, like, certainly no shame in the Hobo Cop. So, like, he is, while a guy who hasn't gotten a shot yet, I think he's a guy everybody should be looking out for. Fremd is very exciting.
All right, there you go. I'm still betting against him, but I won't make this one a lock. Regardless, I'm taking Hernandez, but the short notice thing is the main thing. Plus, well, I don't know a lot about Fran. I do now, but short notice fighters, 38% winning percentage this year, 30% winning percentage. So I'm going to say Fluffy, but you made a very good case there.
Thank you.
All right, main event time. Other early prelims. Heavyweights, Alexei Oleinik versus Jared Vandera. Oleinik is the boa constrictor. Vandera has no nickname. All right, Vandera, 12-7, 7 knockouts, 3 submissions. He's been knocked out twice, submitted twice. Make that submitted 3 times after Saturday, huh? He's won one of his 4 UFC fights. So he's 1-3 in the UFC. He's lost 2 straight. He won his way in via the Contender Series, where he's 1-0. He was regional champ. He is taking this fight on short notice, as mentioned off the top. Based on the last weigh-ins, he was 37 pounds heavier than Oleinik. He's also 2 inches taller and 15 years younger. He's the more active striker of the two men as well. This is a pick-em fight, -110. The bulk constrictor, 59-16-1, 8 knockouts, 46 submissions. You've heard all this before because we broke him down a couple weeks ago for his fight that got canceled. He's been knocked out 9 times, submitted twice. 8-7 in the UFC. He's lost 3 straight. He's won 2 of his last 5. He's 1-1 in Bellator. He has multiple regional championships on his
mantle.
1996 debut, when Dan was... No, Dan, we decided Dan wasn't even in Little League yet, right? You were too young for it still.
Crazy. In 96, yeah, I would have been too young for Little League.
Yep. Striking stats in his favor, grappling stats in his favor, -110. I'm going with Oleinik here.
Yes, we brought you to the dark side.
Well, hey, I've always liked the guy. I just didn't think he was going to beat Latifi. He is going to beat Vandera, though, because, Vandera is not impressed at all since he's been in the UFC. And taking this in short notice, which I just gave you the stats on, plus he's been submitted multiple times. And, like I said, he's just – I don't think he poses too much of a threat for Oleinik. So the old man is my pick.
Here's a hot take. First of all, I'm going to take Oleinik. I'll side with y'all and I'll kill the excitement there. So, but I am going to go with Oleinik. I actually think Jared Vandera is a worse matchup for Alexei Oleinik than Ilir Latifi was. While the line is closer, and like you pointed out, Vandera has tapped out a few times, I actually think his length poses some real weird issues for Oleinik if he can't get inside. Whereas like Latifi, that dude is like it's like fighting a fire hydrant. Like, he has to get inside. He doesn't have an option, and, like, that's where the danger is with Oleinik. I still think Olenek's going to win and get the submission, but I do think Vandera is, like, a weirder, tougher task for Oleinik, and I don't like that the odds got worse for me, because I was going to take Oleinik versus Latifi. Now I'm taking him in a tougher matchup, and I lost a little bit on the odds, so... Of course, I'm taking Alexei Oleinik to pick up his 60th win here, but I think there's some weird style things there that at least make me not want to jump all over this line.
A worse opponent, but a worse matchup as well, as he said. So, all right, so that wraps up the early prelims. We're going to move on to the proper prelims. But first, Coors Light, they are back. They are back. Do you ever feel like you're always on? We're always on here. The MMA Gambling Podcast, always on. Work, friends, family, a million pressing social issues and an expectation to be on 24/7. Sometimes you just need a moment to turn off and hit reset. That's when you reach for Coors Light. It's made to chill. Mountain Cold Refreshment, made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's literally made to chill. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies, which neither of us have been to, because Dan said he's never been west of Mississippi, and I haven't been to Colorado. Correct?
That's correct. I've never been there.
Right. Well, we'll have to take the word for that. It's literally made to chill. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. Not the hockey team. Perfect for a moment to unwind. When I need to take a second for myself or reach for a beer that's made to chill, get Coors Light delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart by going to CoorsLight.com/SGP. That's CoorsLight.com/SGP. And remember to always celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. IP Vanish. After you make those Coors Light vanish, then you can use IP Vanish. Did you know that browsing online using incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? That's right. Without added security, you might as well give away all your private data to hackers, advertisers, your ISP, and other prying eyes. That's why I use IP Vanish VPN to make it easy to stay truly private and secure on the internet. IPVanish helps you safely browse the internet by encrypting 100% of your data. This means that your private details, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be completely shielded from falling into the wrong hands. Even your physical location will be hidden. So we discovered that you could be at the Twin Rivers Casino and no one would know it. So IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. It's that simple. You can use IPVanish on unlimited devices without sacrificing on speed, your computers, tablets, phones, even devices like your Fire Stick. When you're streaming media, whether I'm at home or in public, I don't go online anymore without IPVanish. IPVanish is offering an incredible 70% off their yearly plan for our listeners with a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's just like getting 9 months for free. IPVanish is super easy to use. All you have to do is tap one button and you're instantly protected. You won't even know it's on. Stop sharing with the world everything you stream, everything you search for, and everything you buy. Take your privacy back today with the brand rated 4.6 out of 5 on Trustpilot. Go to ipvanish.com/SGP and use promotional code SGP and claim your 70% savings. That's ipvanish.com/SGP. All right. Did you see that the Stanford Pentagon tweeted out our last episode, Dan? So they obviously are listening. They knew we talked about them.
Did they really? That's awesome.
Yes, no joke.
I did not catch that. Yeah. I will make sure. And if whoever is in charge of the Stanford Pentagon, whoever's in charge of that website with Twitter account, whoever's in charge of that is listening again today, shout out to you again. Give us another shout out. Thanks, man.
That was a really butchered shout out. I think social media manager, maybe, is what you were trying to say?
Yeah, something like that. I mean, like, people have a number of jobs and doing many things.
It's true. But I guess lucky for us, no mention on Twitter from Twin Cities Casino. So Twin Rivers.
Yeah.
So maybe they're not fans. Or maybe they did listen. That's why we haven't heard from them. All right. The curtain jerker of the prelims on ESPN at 8 p.m. Eastern, Mickey Gall versus Mike Malott in a welterweight fight. Mike proper Malott. He is a Canadian as well. It's not the Mike Malott that I went to school with and was the football star in university. No, this is a different Mike Malott. Let's talk about Mickey Gall first. 7-4 with 6 submissions. He's been knocked out once. He's 6-4 in the UFC. Okay, here's a pattern for you. Loss, win, loss, win, loss, win, loss. 7 straight fights for this man, and he did lose his last fight. He's got inch of height, inch of reach on Malott, plus 166. Mike proper Malott, 7-1-1, 3 knockouts, 4 submissions, so he's finished all of his opponents, and he's been finished in his only loss was a knockout. This is his debut after winning on the Contender Series. He's won 3 straight fights, all via finish, obviously. He has 1 draw in his Bellator fight. He was 0-1 World Series of Fighting. Made his debut back in 2011, so he's finally making his UFC debut, 11 years in. More active striker just based off of the one fight he had in the Contender Series, minus 200. Over to you.
I'm going to go with Malott here. When I originally looked at it, I was thinking maybe Gall on an upset pick, but the more and more I think about it, Mike Malott has got good jiu-jitsu, and I think that is a big important piece of just being safe when you're grappling with Mickey Gall. And as long as he's safe there, I think he's a way better striker. You know, you mentioned he's coming off of back-to-back wins, both by submission, rear naked choke over Solomon Renfro, which, by the way, despite being in CFFC, is a huge win. Solomon Renfro, very hot prospect. And he was actually, Malott had almost not fought in 4 full years when he fought a hot prospect in Renfro. So to do that, incredible. And then he beat a really good prospect again, Shimon Smotrytsky, who was only like 20 years old on Contender Series. Again, submission in under a minute. Both of those, though, were set up with his hands. He's got a lot of power in his hands. He stung both guys and jumped on submissions. I actually think that, like, that's his path to victory here. As long as he's safe with Mickey Gall in any grappling exchanges that might occur, I think he's probably just going to knock Mickey Gall silly on the feet. You know, like, Mickey Gall has shown improvement in his boxing, but definitely not to the point where he's going to take a bunch of shots from Mike Malott.
No, Malott is the pick, for sure. Has Gall really made that much improvement through 10 UFC fights? We haven't really seen, and he was a young guy. We haven't seen massive improvements, really, right?
So I haven't seen – so, like, if you look at it over 10 fights, I think it's really hard to say, like, Mickey Gall has made a lot of improvement from where he started to now, because then you put it in the context of it's been 10 fights in a ton of years, and you're like, oh, yeah, maybe he hasn't changed all that much in consideration. But I do think if you just, like, isolated his last two or three fights, the amount of change he's had in his boxing in that amount of time has actually been pretty good. Like, in the Jordan Williams fight he had, I thought his jab looked really good in that fight. I thought he was putting combinations together quite well. And I was like, oh, this looks like an improved Mickey Gall. So, yeah, like, if you look in the grand scheme of things and you're, like, over 10 years and average it all out, yeah, it doesn't look like he's making big gains. But recently, I think he has started to turn things around.
Fair enough. Jordan Williams. This is a Jordan Williams podcast, I think, eh? Almost every episode. He's not even in the UFC anymore.
I do regularly mention Jordan yep. Bumbaye Williams, yes.
Yep. It's weird. Some people come up often. He's one of the people. All right, women's bantamweight. Aspen Ladd versus Raquel Pennington. I don't know why it's at bantamweight when both ladies have fought at featherweight. They may as well just fight at featherweight. But anyhow, all right, Aspen Ladd, no nickname. Pennington famously is Rocky. All right, we'll go with Ladd first. 9-2, 6 knockouts, 1 submission. She's been knocked out once in her career. She's 4-2 in the UFC. She's gone loss, win, loss over her last three. She was 5-0 in Invicta, so she was very highly touted when she came into the UFC. She used to fight, like I said, at featherweight. She also used to fight at flyweight. She officially missed weight once. Then did she have to pull out of a fight too at the last minute? I think she has. Anyhow, she's had plenty of weight issues. 7 years younger than Pennington. Grappling stats in her favor, plus 160. Pennington, 13-8, 1 knockout, 4 submissions. She's been knocked out once, submitted once. She's 10-5 in the UFC. She's won 3 straight and 4 of 5. She won via submission her last fight. She was in the Ultimate Fighter, where she went 2-1. She's, like I said, she used to fight at featherweight. She was 1-2 in Invicta. She was a regional champ. She's taking this on short notice. She got an inch of height, inch of reach on Ladd. Striking stats in her favor, minus 195. I'm going to go against the short notice thing. I'm shocking, surprising myself that I'm picking against Aspen Ladd, but that's where we've gotten with her. You don't really know what you're going to get with her mentally. And, yeah, I think Pennington is, like a wise man said in one of his other podcasts, she's physically strong enough to keep Ladd off of her, and she's definitely better on the feet. So, Pennington's the pick. I'm not so sure about almost a minus 200 line on this, but she's my pick to win it.
I think the interesting thing about this is just how bad of a matchup she is for Aspen Ladd, right? Like, you know, you mentioned she's physically strong, and that's generally what Aspen Ladd goes to when she's having trouble getting done what she needs to get done. So I kind of see that being what happens here, is that she has a lot of trouble with what she wants to do. She has to go to the wrestling. That's not going to work against Pennington. Pennington's also got great subs, worth mentioning. Like, she's really good at submitting people. So, you know, I think we're probably going to see a little bit of that, too. So, yeah, ultimately, I am just not in on Aspen Ladd here. And all of this breakdown is contingent upon whether or not she comes out super tentative or not. Because she comes out super tentative, she's in an even worse spot, in my opinion. So, yeah, I'm definitely going with Raquel Pennington here.
It's sad how Ladd has fallen so much, at least in our eyes. Like, she was one of the possible future champs, eh?
Yeah, I think a lot of people had her pegged as a future champ. And you know what, too? I will say this pick isn't completely detracting from her, in my opinion. Like, part of what I'm saying here is just that, like, of all of the people you could have paired her with, Raquel Pennington's one of the worst ones you could have paired her with. It's just a really tough matchup for her, in the fact that, you know, Raquel Pennington is big and strong and physical and fights like a gritty style of fight against somebody who just came out and looked more tentative than just about anybody on the planet has ever looked. So, yeah, I mean, like, some of it is that. Some of it is, you know, she is looking a little bit more washed. But, yeah, at the end of the day, I do really like Pennington in this fight.
Yeah. If, like, 2 years ago, if this fight was happening, there's no way we'd be picking Pennington over Ladd, would there be?
I don't think so, but also was Pennington 2 years ago in a title fight? Am I wrong?
Yeah, possibly, yeah.
She fought for the title. No, sorry. I fucked up. It was 4 years ago.
Still close. But yeah, no, she's turned things around as of late. 3 straight, 4 of 5. Oh yeah, I forgot. This is the power couples card. Her fiance is in the main portion of the card. So we'll get to her in a few minutes. All right. Moving on to another one of our chunky guy fights. We already had, yeah, this is pretty good for chunky guys. This is our second chunky guy fight. Jairzinho Rozenstruik, who famously has a big doink. Is that what Badoink a doink? Is that what the missus said he had? It was something like
my,
that, Dan.
My wife said he had a big donk, I believe.
Donk. Well, she apparently she knows. I don't know that. Fighting Marcin Tybura. All right. What can I tell you about? Tybura, and Rosa Strike is Biggie Boy. Let's talk about Tybura first. 22-7, 9 knockouts, 6 submissions. He's been knocked out 4 times. He's 9-6 in the UFC. However, he's won. It's Tybura and Pennington who have really turned things around. Veterans turned things around as of late. He's won 5 of his last 6. He did lose the last fight, but he won 5 straight before that. He was the M1 champion before going to the UFC. Made his debut in 2011. He's an inch taller than Rosenstrike, striking and active striking stats in his favor. Grappling stats in his favor, plus 128. Biggie Boy, 12-3, 11 knockouts. He's been knocked out once. He's 6-3 in the UFC. We got a pattern. Loss, win, loss, win, loss. So it's 5 straight fights where he's swapped losses and wins. The last fight was a loss. He was a kickboxing champion. He made his debut in 2012. Based on the last weigh-ins, he was about 8 pounds heavier than Tybura, so pretty much a wash there. 3 years younger, minus 155. You're up this time, I believe, right?
I'm going to take the dog here in Marcin Tybura. You know, like, I don't want to write off Jair Rosenstrike as being washed, but I have a lot of the same problems with him as I do with Aspen Ladd, is he can get really tentative on his feet. I think he has sort of fallen back in some of his fights on the fact that he can knock anybody out at any time, and that hasn't necessarily gone well for him. And when we saw him up against Curtis Blaydes, he showed a real wrestling deficit, which, granted, everybody does against Curtis Blaydes, but I think it's bad enough that I think Marcin Tybura can either tap into that or just lean against him enough on the cage so that a lot of his work in this fight will be labored. I think Tybura is in a good position to do that kind of stuff.
Tybura is my pick as well. I'm going with the dog, too. Pretty much the same reasons. I think he can grind this one out. And he's got an experience avoiding getting knocked out by big swimmers. Only been knocked out 4 times in 30. This will be his 30th fight, so that's impressive for a heavyweight. So yeah, I think he's a very good underdog pick here. Like you said, he can make this one dirty, grind it out, and it's not like Rosenstrike's been setting the world on fire as of late anyhow. So let's roll the dice on the underdog. All right, that brings us to our main event of the prelims. Welterweights, Ian Garry versus Darian Weeks. Darian Weeks was on the Top Turtle MMA podcast this week, so keep that in mind when you're making your picks. Who else was on it? There was
Vince from Hell Pushel.
Right. Yeah, he's another fun guy you have on your podcast always.
He's a very interesting character.
He's a character for sure. All right, let's tell you about this one. Weeks, no nickname. Garry is the future. So I think he's still young enough that we can call him the future, and he's still undefeated. So that nickname, I will allow it to stand at this point. All right, Weeks, 5-1, 4 knockouts, 1 submission. So all of his wins come via finish. He's never been finished himself in a fight. He's 0-1 in the UFC. He's 1-1 as a pro boxer. He's twice more active than Garry landing strikes, but Gary's only fought one. Oh, they both only fought once in the UFC, so very small sample size. Grappling stats also in his favor. Once again, sample size, plus 275. The future, Ian Garry, 5-0, 5 knockouts, 1 submission, 1-0 in the UFC via knockout. He was the Cage Warriors champion. 4-inch height, 2 inches reach, 4 years younger. Striking stats in his favor, minus 350. Well, I would trust Weeks to cut my hair over Garry. I'm going to take Garry with the pick here. I think he is a legit prospect here, and he's another one of those guys we haven't seen his ceiling yet, I don't think. So I will take him in this fight.
Yeah, I'm going to take Garry too. I think, first of all, you know, I really do like the output of Darian Weeks. He really went at it in that Brian Barberena fight. He went out, he threw 108 strikes, or landed 108 strikes, rather. He absolutely put on a performance. And at the end of the day, it wasn't enough, right? Like, he wasn't able to secure the win, but also he ate 118 punches. And at the end of the day, that's what gives me worry against somebody like Ian Garry, is that he just simply can't take that many punches against Ian Garry. He hits too hard, and Ian Garry will put him away. So, yeah, I'm also with you on this one. I'm going to take Ian Garry.
The UFC must have some kind of issue with Weeks. Is Dana White really not supposed to be bald? And then he went to get his haircut by Weeks, and that's what happened? Because they're not doing him any favors here.
I think they're really high on him, to be honest with you. Like, I think he is the type of opponent you put against a Brian Barberena on short notice or an Ian Garry, just because, like, his record says 5-1, right, which isn't super impressive. But have you seen his AMI record? He's fought, like, fucking 20 times. Like, he has one of those crazy amateur records where he fought at IMMAF Worlds, which means he took, like, 7 fights in a weekend or something like that. And then he backed it up by going again. He went to Oceanic Championships to qualify one time. Like, the dude just kept fighting on the amateur level. So he's really experienced for a guy who's 5-1. So I think the UFC knows he's like a nice litmus test. And Ian Garry kind of needs that because he didn't look great last time out against, get this, Jordan Williams.
Oh, wow. It all comes back to Jordan Williams. Yeah, they might like Weeks, but they don't like him enough to give him a chance to ever get his win bonus. He's still getting 12 grand per fight because he's going to lose this one too, according to us. So, do you understand? A guy named The Future is fighting a barber.
Yes, your favorite.
It comes about Macy Barber connection again, too.
Your
wow.
favorite reference, Macy the Future Barber.
The future hairstylist.
It is way better to imagine that her nickname is Future Barber.
Yeah, that was a great episode, everyone.
Yeah.
Go back to the archives.
Go back and listen to our entire archives.
Exactly. And listen to Top Turtle this week, because during Weeks, good interview. Plus, he was working in his barbershop cutting someone's hair while Dan was interviewing him.
Yeah, which is a wild revelation, because he's doing it's a great interview, and he told me about halfway through, and it was very, very fun to find out.
He's like Vidalia. Where is he from? Vidalia, Georgia, or somewhere like that. I think I looked up his place. It's called The Weekly Haircut, I think.
I see what he did there.
Exactly. So anyhow. Good guy, but regardless, we're picking him to lose. Sorry. Again, how good do you think Ian Garry is? I guess we can talk more about this on Sunday after the fight, but you think he's legit?
No, I don't. Yeah, I'll be honest. I'm not sold on the hype. Like, you don't get hit that much by Jordan Williams and let me stay high on you. I just think he's got a lot of things to work out, and the confidence level is – I'm not one of those guys who's like, he's overconfident and I don't like him. But I think it's alarming for his progress. I think it is going to ultimately hinder how much he grows. So, I'm lower on it than a lot of other prospects they've hyped up that much. I will say I'm higher on him than I am Patty Pimblett.
Yeah, that's true. Is he a future barber perhaps then?
He might possibly be a future barber.
Oh, yeah. Boy. All right, that's the prelims. We're not done yet, though. We got our big pay-per-view portion of the card coming up. First, our last two sponsors, and we'll do it ad and stop free. We'll just rip right through the main card. All right, Stable Duo. There are never enough things to gamble on, and the one sport that runs 365 days a year is horse racing. Best part is now there is a new way to play the ponies, especially if you are brand new to the sport. Check out Stable Duo, a daily fantasy-style app where you can play free and paid games for real cash prizes. Pick your horses, build your stable, and play against others to move up the leaderboard. Win as much as $40,000 with one entry. Don't know anything about horses? Not to worry. The app gives you clear data on which horses to select to build your best strategy. The app is free to download at stableduo.com. Multiple games are offered each day with free games weekly at tracks all over the United States. Get in the app, create your account, and start building your stables today. Invite your friends to play against you or against our stables. You can even follow them in the app. We can compare our own stats. Download now at stableduo.com. See how many winners you can pick in your stable. See in the winner's circle, play, race, win. And we're brought to you by PropSwap, where America buys and sells sports bets. Masters Week is here, and if you haven't used PropSwap to go for the green, then you are missing out. PropSwap is the only app that allows you to pick your favorite golfers and then sell your bets whenever you want. Many PropSwappers make thousands of dollars just by buying and selling their golfers all tournament long. This allows you to win over and over without your golfer ever touching the green jacket. Go to PropSwap.com or download the free PropSwap app today. PropSwap has fantastic features like filtering listed tickets based on the best value, a free activity feed to stay in the know with all the big sales and red hot tickets for sale, a loyalty rewards program that turns your ticket sales into extra bonus cash, and a first deposit cash match. Use promo code SGP on your first deposit and a profitable match your deposit at $500. Join the real sports bettors on PropSwap where America buys and sells sports bets. All right, main card time. The aforementioned Vince from Hell, Pichel, is leading things off at lightweight against Mark O. Madsen, the O stands for the Olympian. But Pichel is not impressed by that. All right, the Olympian, 11-0. Three knockouts, three submissions, 3-0 in the UFC. He's an Olympic silver medalist in wrestling. He's 2 years younger than Pichel. Striking and active striking stats in his favor, plus 112. Pichel, 14-2, eight knockouts. One knockout, one submission. He's been knocked out once, excuse me, and submitted once. So both of his losses have come via finish. He is 7-2 in the UFC. He's won three straight and 7 of 8. He's another late career, or he's older, maybe not late career, but older guy who is on a tear right now. He was on the Ultimate Fighter. Everything comes back to that, of course, where he went 3-1. Made his pro debut in 2009. He's got, so this is late in his career, excuse me. He's 2 inches taller than Madsen, minus 135. Is it me?
I believe it's you, because I picked Mike Malott.
I think I'm going to go against you. I'm thinking you're picking Pichel. I'm not positive. I'm taking the Olympian. I'm counting on that wrestling to come through, as it has 11 times already in the past. I don't think Pichel can keep him off him. He's not a good enough grappler, so Madsen is my pick. At underdog money. Thank you.
And I think you don't understand me well enough, because I'm also going Mark Madsen.
Right. No, I just thought I heard you say Pichel at some point, but you must not have.
So, no, go I'm going to go with Mark Madsen. This one was probably one of the harder ones for me to call, because I think Vince Pichel has made some real gains, and I'm not entirely sold on Mark Madsen as a grappler in this division. You know, for the record, he was a Greco-Roman wrestling silver medalist, right, which is different than freestyle in that – you know, it's less double legs and getting in on the legs and stuff like that, and more upper body clinches, which I don't know if it plays better or worse in MMA, but it plays different, which has made it so that I haven't been completely convinced in what he does so far. But with that being said, Vince Pichel's only two losses are to dudes who wrestle well. You know, he lost to Gregor Gillespie. In fact, he got manhandled by Gregor Gillespie. And then he got beat up a long time ago by Rustam Khabilov. So, like, it seems like there's a wrestling weakness there, and yes, he seems to be getting better as he ages, but there is also going to be a limit to how good he gets at 39 or however old he is, whereas I think Madsen is in kind of his stride, and he's a bad matchup for him. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Madsen, too. I wouldn't say I'm, like, thrilled about this pick. I've wavered a little bit back and forth, but I am going to go with Madsen.
Got to be happy with the plus money, though, right?
And that's the other thing that really swung me to him is that, like, I think when you have a guy who's only lost twice and both those losses are to wrestlers and you're going to pair him with a wrestler and give that wrestler plus money, I think you got to kind of play there.
We're obviously missing something here, Dan. I don't know what it is, but maybe we're missing something. Next fight, another one that's pretty much a pick'em on the board, and then going forward, the rest of the fights are very lopsided on the books. All right, women's strawweight, Mackenzie Dern versus Tisha Torres, the other half of the Pennington-Torres combo. She is a tiny tornado, or double T, you can call her also. She is the slight underdog here. Let me tell you about her first. 13-5, one knockout, one submission, never finished in a fight. So probably if you're going to pick Torres, even though -195 is a good number, you may want to pick her via decision, because pretty much all her fights go to decision. 9-5 in the UFC. She won three straight fights. Before that, she lost four straight. So she's the other one I was thinking of. So it's been Torres, Pennington, Tybura, Pichel. There's a lot of people late in their careers or later in their careers that are on runs right now. So she lost four straight. Then she's turned things around completely, won three straight. She was 1-2 on the Ultimate Fighter, because it all comes back to that. 4-0 in Invicta. She made her debut in 2012. Striking stats in her favor. She's but 1.5 times more active landing strikes than Dern as well. Plus, surprisingly, grappling stats are in her favor, because Mackenzie Dern is not – he doesn't put up the stats for grappling, to say the least. Does not put up very good wrestling stats. -105 on Torres. Dern, 11-2 with 7 submissions, never been finished in a fight. 6-2 in the UFC. She's won 4 straight. She won 4 straight and then lost her last fight. So she went 4-1 over her last 5. She's had weight issues in the past, but that seems to have been corrected now. Knock on wood. She used to fight at flyweight. I have written down here that she's a grappling champ, but that's the understatement of the century. She's she is the queen of grappling. 3 inches taller than Torres, because everyone's at least 3 inches taller than Torres. 3 inches of reach on Torres as well. 4 years younger than her, and -115. Your turn.
Is it my turn?
I think I picked Madsen.
You picked Matt. Yeah, that's right. You picked Matt, and then I tailed. Yeah, I'm gonna go with Mackenzie Dern.
You admitted it. Go ahead. Sorry.
I'm gonna go with Mackenzie Dern in this one. Look, I do really like Tisha Torres. I think her striking poses a lot of problems for Mackenzie Dern. But at the end of the day, I think Dern's gonna get her down. And really, have we seen too much of Tisha Torres off of her back? Not really. And that alarms me. And what we've seen has not looked particularly good. And look, I think Mackenzie Dern has come a long way with her striking. She's come a long way with closing her distance. She's come a long way with getting in on the legs. And look, if you can get Marina Rodriguez down a couple of times, I think you're probably going to get Tisha Torres down a couple of times. And I think you're going to have more success there. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Dern here.
No, I am not. I'm taking Torres. I don't think she's going to – well, she may get Torres down, but that's not a guarantee. I think Torres is tough enough to keep her off her. And she's – as Dern has improved with striking, it's true, but I don't think she's improved enough. Torres is a better and more active striker than she is. And she's on a very nice roll right now. So I am going with the slight underdog in Tisha Torres. So we're differing on at least one fight on the main card. Oh, I think we're in a different one.
I just want to give you a quick little insight into Tisha Torres's takedown defense. So she was taken down twice by Angela Hill, twice by Brianna Van Buren, twice by Weili Zhang, once by Marina Rodriguez, who I didn't know shot takedowns, 10 times by Jessica Andrade, twice by Michelle Watterson. She got taken down by Beck Rawlings. Do you remember Beck Rawlings?
Yeah.
Took her down twice.
Old news. So she's much better now.
I mean, she's the same person who got taken down by Brianna Van Buren twice.
And guess what? Yeah. All those people are better wrestlers than Mackenzie Dern.
Ooh. No, Angela Hill is not a better. I'm gonna pump your brakes real hard there. A better wrestler than Mackenzie Dern. Let's get that out of the way first.
All right, I'm sticking with Nadia because I can't change now because I would show weakness, Dan, and I can't show weakness. So. Torres is the
You pick. Showed weakness by saying that Angela Hill is a better wrestler than Mackenzie Dern. That's the weakness she showed.
That's true. I threw some shade, as the children say. All right, here comes where Dan gets silly. Welterweights, Gilbert Burns versus Hamzat Chimaev. Boars is Chimaev, which nickname is Badger. It means Badger, which is basically perfect for him, inside and outside the cage. Andorino is Burns' nickname, which translates to tiny, tough guy, which is very, very funny. All right, Burns, 20-4, 6 knockouts, 8 submissions. He's been knocked out twice, 3 times coming up soon. 13-4 in the UFC. He's won 7 of his last 8. He did win his last fight. His only loss came to the champion in those 8 fights. That guy, that Kamaru guy, Usman, he used to fight at, I have welterweight, but he's fighting welterweight. He used to fight at lightweight, right?
Correct, yeah. He fought at, okay. most of the Usman loss are at lightweight. Like, he's only lost once at welterweight.
Right. Made his debut in 2012. He is a grappling champion. Once again, another understatement, but he's a very, very highly decorated grappler, plus 400. Chimaev, 10-0, 6 knockouts, 4 submissions. Everything's a finish for him. 4-0 in the UFC. He used to fight at middleweight. He is a wrestling champ as well. 4 inches of height on Burns, 4 inches of reach, 8 years younger. Striking stats in his favor. He's almost land strikes, almost 3 times more active landing strikes than Burns. Grappling stats in his favor, -550. All right, Dan, go ahead. Tell us why you're taking a plus 400 pick here.
I'm taking Gilbert Burns, and I think there's loads of value on this line. Do I think this is clearly a Gilbert Burns pick? No, but I do think it is a lot closer to a coin flip than the odds would suggest. Like, I think this fight is pretty much a coin flip in that there are so many unanswered questions about Khamzat Chimaev. You can say what you want about how good his technique has looked. It has looked good. But the bottom line is the best fighter he's ever fought is Li Jingliang. And in that Li Jingliang fight, he took him down within the first 5 seconds of the fight. when Li Jingliang threw stupid hooks. And what is Li Jingliang known for? Getting taken down when he overextends himself on the feet. So, like, all we did was see him beat people in the way that they are most likely to be beat. He knocked out Gerald Meerschaert. Guess what? Gerald Meerschaert gets knocked out when he boxes people. It's just kind of a fact. So, you know, look, I think that Khamzat Chimaev is the real deal. You want to sell me on the fact that he's still a champion at some point in time in his career? I'll buy that, too. But at the end of the day, I think this is far too big of a step up. He's going to be in there against a jiu-jitsu champion. We've never seen him with somebody who knows what they're doing on the mat. Like, literally, never seen somebody in there with him who knows what they're doing on the mat. I also think Burns can box. So I think Gilbert Burns is by far the better play here.
All right, it's not happening. But if you want to piss your money away on a lottery ticket, go right ahead. Jamal's bigger, stronger, hits harder, is an insane grappler.
Do we know that he hits harder?
Yes.
Objectively, let's just talk about this for a second. What makes you think he hits harder than Gilbert Burns? Like, the fact that he knocked out Gerald Meerschaert? So did Sam Elvey. Sam Elvey knocked out Gerald Meerschaert. Like, we're using that as a gauge to say that he hits harder? There's plenty of one-touch knockouts on Gilbert Burns' side, too. He knocked Demian Mayas at cold back in the day. And that, to me, is even more impressive because people don't knock out Demian Maya. So I've seen him knock out dudes like Demian Maya, where I've seen Khamzat Chimaev knock out dudes who get knocked out.
Okay. It only took him 10 fights to get as many knockouts as Burns has in 24, but okay. That's fine.
That happens when you fight cupcakes, dude. He fought Reese McKee. He fought Gerald Meerschaert. He fought John Phillips. And, like, if you look at his regional record, with the exception of one fight – actually, I take that back. With the exception of two fights, none of the guys had fought more than six times in their career. So it's not like his regional record is filled with killers either. He's just mostly fought people who are very easier – much easier matchups for him in the UFC.
Okay. I disagree, Dan.
You realize if I'm right on this one,
you'll be the only one right. But yes,
you may also have to rename it the Dan Vreeland Gambling Podcast.
That's fine. we can do that. So Dan is taking Gilbert Burns +400. How many +400 dogs have come through this year? Oh, zero. We've had +340.
How many have I hit on this show? Three. This would be the third plus one. Yes, correct.
We've had six fights this year have come through at +200 odds or higher. So. This would be fight number seven if it happens. All right. Co-main event, because Aljamain Sterling does not get to main event fight cards. We just got it. UFC Bantamweight Championship, Aljamain Sterling versus Fyodor Yan. Oh, this is a unification fight because Yan's the interim champion. Yan's nickname is No Mercy, which is fitting, and Sterling's Funkmaster, which is also fitting. All right, let's tell you, the proper champion is the big underdog here. Sterling, 20-3, 2 knockouts, 8 submissions. He's been knocked out once, 12-3 in the UFC. He's won 6 straight fights. He won his last fight via disqualification back in March of 2021. That got him the belt. He's has multiple regional championships on his
mantle.
Right. He used to fight at featherweight. Made his debut in 2011. He was a wrestling champion. He's got 4 inches of reach on Yan, +360. Yan, 16-2, 7 knockouts, 1 submission, never been finished in a fight, 8-1 in the UFC. He won his last fight to give him the interim title. He was ACB champ as well before. 4 years younger than Sterling, more active striker of the two, -475. Yan is the obvious choice here. But yeah, Dan mentioned this on one of his other podcasts, but something I mentioned on our podcast a while back, there's been a lot of revisionist history going on about these men, these fighters' first meeting. Sterling was winning the fight on a judge's scorecard. He outstruck Yan. Even though it looked like he was in dire straits at the end there, he technically was winning. But Yan definitely was – the fight definitely had taken a turn when Yan threw that ill-advised knee. So, and the strikes landed were definitely of a different scale. He may have had the quantity, but Yan definitely had the quality. So I don't see Yan losing this fight unless he's dumb again with illegal strikes. So he is the pick.
I am going to go with Jan too, but I just would say I'm not sure that I like this line. In fact, I really hate it because, like you said, there's a lot of revisionist history around this fight. We also now know that Aljamain Sterling has had basically a year to prepare for Piotr Jan. He won a round of those three rounds, and in one judge's eye, he won both of the first two rounds. He was actually up 2-1 when the illegal knee landed. So, yeah, I think that fight is a lot closer. And if Aljo went out 1-4-5, he wins that fight, which, I don't think he was in line to, but it's at least interesting to think about. So, I'm going to go with Piotr Jan too, but I am a lot higher on Aljamain Sterling than a lot of people.
Yep. True. All right, main event time. Featherweights championship of the world. Alexander Volkanovski. Not Alexander Volkov. I don't think he could cut to featherweight. So Volkanovski is fighting Chan Sung Jung. You may know him as... Actually, no, he doesn't have a nickname anymore because I took it. All right, let's tell you about the no nickname Jung. 17-6, 6 knockouts, 8 submissions. He's been knocked out himself 3 times. 7-3 in the UFC. He's won 3 of his last 4, including his last fight. He's 0-1 in title fights. He lost to Jose Aldo. He was 0-2 in world WEC, Never Die, before he made it to the, or moved into the UFC. Made his debut in 2007. He's 15-0 as a pro kickboxer. He's an inch taller and has an inch reach on Volkanovski. Grappling stats in his favor, plus 525. Alexander the Great Volkanovski, not a great nickname, definitely needs a new nickname. That's just the placeholder nickname for anyone named Alex. He's 23-1. He's got 11 knockouts, 3 submissions on his resume. He's been knocked out once in his career. That was in his fourth fight. He's won 20 straight fights since then. He's including those 20 straight wins have been 2 successful title defenses of the featherweight championship in the UFC. He's 10-0 in the UFC. He's got multiple regional championships on his
mantle.
He used to fight at welterweight. He used to fight at lightweight. Made his debut in 2012. He was 1-0 as a pro boxer. He's a year younger. Striking stats in his favor, and he's 1.5 or 1.6 times, to be exact, more active landing strikes than Jung is. Minus 750. Over to you.
Yeah, this one's an easy one. I'm taking Volkanovski. I think he's one of the best mixed martial artists in the world. If it's not Usman,
maybe,
it's him.
If
it's not Usman, it's him. That's the bottom line. And I also think he's an awful matchup for Korean Zombie, a guy who needs you to get in kind of a gnarly fight with him, because Volkanovski is like the smartest dude on the planet. That's what makes him such a good fighter, is he's got great game planning, he knows what he's doing, and he doesn't take unnecessary risk. I was actually talking to somebody earlier today about whether or not I thought Volkanovski could get the finish. The answer is I know he could get the finish. Will he go for it? Probably not. He's probably going to win this pretty safely 4-1. That's just the bottom line, because he doesn't go for it. And I have no problem with it, because he's great at what he does, and he wins this fight pretty easily.
Correct. I agree with all of that. Volkanovski is the pick here. And, yeah, I think he's probably number 2 behind Usman, but maybe number 1. Could be an argument made for him to be the best in the world. So
I would just ask this in that debate, and I've been thinking about it a lot too, because I've been contemplating changing my official pound for pound rankings and putting Volk at number 1 after having him at 2 for a while. Do you find 2 wins over Max Holloway more impressive than 2 wins over Colby Covington?
Or over Jorge Masvidal, yes.
Do you count a win over Chad Mendes and Jose Aldo as being better than 2 over Jorge Masvidal and 1 over Gilbert Burns?
Yes.
Yeah, you do.
A win over Ortega, right?
I do too. Yeah, and that win over Ortega, do you put that above the win over Burns? Yeah, I probably do. So when you start to line up all the wins next to each other, dude, you just keep putting checkboxes in Volkanovski's box. It's crazy at the end of the day. I actually think he's number 1 pound for pound at the end of it.
Well, maybe after this weekend he will be in all of our eyes. So, it's not that – he's fighting a dangerous guy, not the top contender in the division, but nonetheless, he's fighting a dangerous guy at the end of the day. So – hopefully it's another win for him, because we are picking him to win. So, all right, that's it. 13 fights. Got it done. Time for our recommended plays, which I always do on the fly. Do you have prepared recommended plays, Dan, or do you do it on the fly?
Really? I always prepare. Yep.
All right. Well, always prepare. All right. Maybe I'll tag along. We'll see what you pick. Go ahead.
All right, I'm going to take in the opening fight of the night. I'm going to take Julio Arce. I'll take $40 on his money line, mostly just because I think Willie Cat is being overvalued because he's got some highlight reel knockouts, and I think Arce just, you know, peppers him with short, straight punches right to the jaw.
Okay, you got it. Arce, $40 at minus 195. Let me see. I'm going to take Alexi Olenek via submission. Do you have the props in front of you?
Yeah, I can get you Olenek by submission. Olenek by submission is going to get you plus 160.
All right, I will take $20 on that, please.
All right, and I'm going to move to my next one, which is I'm going to take $20 on Josh Fremd's money line.
Oh, interesting. So what are we getting that for again? I told you it's a plus number, isn't it?
Yes.
Plus 155.
Nice.
All right. I am not advising that pick, but I will put it in here nonetheless. All right. Don't like that. No. Oh, this is me going through the card. I better start making some picks here. No. All right, Tisha Torres, via decision. What can I get for that on that?
Tisha Torres on the cards. Tisha Torres wins by decision, plus 140.
40, $20 on that, please.
All right. I'm going to take $20, so that I've been 40, 20. This is another 20, that'll bring me to 80 on Mark Madsen's money line.
All right, Madsen plus 112. I'm gonna tell that one. Madsen, I'll take $20 as well on that, please.
All right. And then my last two ones I'm just going to put together at the end because they're big $10 bets on Big Fat Odds. So I'm going to take $10 on the Gilbert Burns line that you've been hating on. And my other $10 I'll put on Mike Malott by submission, which I'm getting at plus 350, which I think is kind of a sleeper play. I think he tags him and bags him.
Tags him and bags him. All right, plus 350. All right, I'm taking $40 on Chimaev via finish. What can I get that?
All right, Chimaev, hang on. I got to scroll down because Best Fight Odds for some reason has this in, like, extra fights, which is a really weird section, but you want to buy any finish inside the distance?
Yeah, inside the distance, yeah.
You get him at negative 185.
All right, I'll take it, $80. Sorry, $40 on that, minus 185. All right, so in conclusion, Gumby, Vreeland, $40, Julio Arce, money line, $20, Josh Fremd, money line, $20, Mark Madsen, money line, $10, Gilbert Burns, money line, $10, Mike Malott via submission. Me, Jeff Fox, $20, Alexi Olenek by sub, $20, Tisha Torres by decision, $20, Mark Madsen money line, $40, Chimaev inside the distance. The guy who doesn't like prop bets has got all prop bets except one.
That's a recipe for success right there.
Sure. We'll wait. But hey, so far this year, we are both up a lot of money on our recommended plays, so. Maybe it is a recipe for success. Who's to say? Do you have one of our big money Hungry Jong 10-1 parlays for everyone, Dan?
I have got a 14-1 parlay for you guys this week. And I'm kicking it back to the 13-1 one that hit earlier. And I'm just giving you two things to bet on.
No way.
We're 14-1. So the first one I'm taking is Mike Malott to win by submission. I mentioned it before as one of my recommended plays, plus 350. Look, I think he's going to tag him with the hands. If you think that he goes for the sub afterwards, which he has in his last two fights, his only two fights in his last 5 years of competition, then hey, that's the way he gets the finish. So I like Mike Malott by submission. And the other one I'm going to go with is Mark Madsen by decision. Mark Madsen by decision is getting plus 240. You pair those together, it's actually a little over 14-1.
There you go. 14-1. Wow. That would be the biggest hit. Yeah, and there's only two fights, too. That's stealing money, Dan. All right. That's it. That's it for the card. We put it to bed. Fairly long episode. I think we can put the episode to bed, too. Anything else we need to tell the people, Dan, other than my usual?
Yeah, you can give
them. Other than the usual begging at the end, I do. Read my MMA site, Money MMA, at Substack. sorry, moneymma.substack.com. Pick'em contest for UFC 273 is on there. You can win stuff for free, and all the UFC payouts and all that fun stuff is on there, as well as a bunch of articles and money and the gambling guides and everything too. So check that out. Check out our writing, sportsgamblingpodcast.com. Baseball season starts tomorrow, Thursday. So we have all of our previews are on there, and Dan is doing a DFS for opening night. When are we going to get that posted, Dan? Tomorrow morning, tonight?
It should come out. Either tonight or tomorrow morning. It is all right. The salaries are set in the lineups already. I even have the line
perfect
put together. I just got to do the little write-up for you.
All right. So you can read that. You can read my if you want to do MMA, DFS. That'll be up Friday for the UFC, and I'll have my UFC prediction column out tomorrow. And we also obviously have every other sport known to man. So check out our stuff at sportsgamblingpodcast.com and our podcast, SGPN Network. Sports Gambling Podcast Network. Dan's podcast, we've plugged enough, but it's Top Turtle MMA, and it's Prelim Primer, and you can follow him on Twitter at Gumby Vreeland and me at Jeff Fox Writer, and I think that is it. So I will bid you adieu till Sunday. We'll be back. Till then, I will remain the Korean Zombie, Jeff Fox. He will remain Gumby Vreeland, and we will talk to you then. Bye.